This is the Quality News Network. The number two ranking Republican senator plans to step down. Senator Trent Lott of Mississippi will resign by the end of the year, but is not exactly saying why. With 5 years to go in his current term, his powerful position on Capitol Hill could go to one of several colleagues, including John Kyle of Arizona or Lamar Alexander of Tennessee. President Bush greeted former Vice President Al Gore to the Oval Office for a private meeting and a traditional photo with the American 2007 Nobel Award winner. Also at tonight's state dinner, Mr. and Mrs. Bush will host diplomatic representatives from more than 40 countries who will attend tomorrow's Middle Eastern Peace Conference in Annapolis, Maryland. Mr. Bush also signed a deal setting the foundation for a potential long-term U.S. troop presence in Iraq, with a round of details still to be negotiated. Iraq would gain full responsibility for internal security, and U.S. troops would be relocated to bases outside the cities. Iraqi officials foresee a long-term presence of around 50,000 troops. That's down from the current figure of more than 160,000. Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton is now running behind the top five Republican presidential contenders in general election matchups. That's according to a new poll. Senator Barack Obama and former Senator John Edwards both hold narrow leads over those same GOP contenders. Twin suicide bombings in Pakistan killed more than 20 policemen, ratcheting up pressure on President General Musharraf. 40 people were wounded, many of them critically. Vice President Dick Cheney has an irregular heartbeat, according to his doctors. The abnormality discovered today during a routine doctor's visit. He's undergoing further medical evaluation and will require moderate outpatient treatment. A powerful typhoon has slammed into northeastern Philippines, flooding 50 villages and killing at least 10 people. Two moderate earthquakes hit central Indonesia. That was over Sunday night. Early reports show 3 are dead, 45 injured, significant damage to some buildings. And in Southern California, residents still sifting through the ashes of a weekend wildfire that destroyed 53 homes in Malibu. Police think a campfire may have ignited the blaze. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
I know your secret. Nobody told me, but I know. Every time your little girl wants you to read her a story and you tell her you're too busy, I know. When your boy needs help with homework and you tell him to ask his mother, I know. Your wife asks you whether the warranty is still good on the broken dishwasher and you tell her you're too tired to look for it, I know. You're very good at keeping the secret, but it does take a lot of effort to keep the charade going. It could be very scary and embarrassing if anyone found out. But I know your secret. You can't read. Neither can 93 million American adults. You're in big company. Instead of running scared, become a hero in your own family. Find a local literacy program at your library. It's free. The day you whisper in your wife's ear, "Honey, I can read," just watch how big her smile is.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
China will buy $15 billion worth of airplanes from European manufacturer Airbus. The 160-aircraft deal announced during a visit by French President Nicolas Sarkozy, his first trip to China as president. The first weekend of U.S. holiday sales beating both Wall Street and retailers' expectations, a 7% increase over this time last year. The big winners were electronics stores and discounters. Conversely, retail stocks fell today as investors took in largely bearish reports about the seasonal shopping kickoff. Fears that the U.S. economy could be headed toward a recession, coupled with a housing slump and soaring oil prices, took the edge off the unexpected increase in initial holiday sales. The euro crept higher today to $1.48 per single euro. And on Asian markets today, gold jumping to nearly $829 an ounce as investors anticipated another cut in U.S. interest rates. Platinum hit record highs as well. Light sweet crude oil trading at $97.70 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow dropping 237 points to end at 12,743. NASDAQ down 55 points. The S&P 500 down 33. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Ask any musician. The best music happens when the sheet music gets put aside and the gang just sits down and jams. Same thing here on The Horn. America's best liberal talk hosts free-forming together for an hour a night. Welcome to The Horn Section. Right here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. Now let's crank up the jam. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Well, I tell you what, I think we will probably have a darn good time on the Horn Section tonight. I'm Bob. Hard not to lately, considering the invigorating sorts of guests that Peter's been having on Strictly Confidential. Peter Godbold, are you vibrating like a struck tuning fork?
Bob, I got to tell you, I was stressing over that interview all day long because this guy is like the real deal. He has a list of masters of divinity from Harvard, Yale, and the list goes all the way down my arm, literally. If I were to just try to read the books the man has written, I could have taken that the first 45 minutes of the show. He was the real deal. And so, obviously, me growing up on a dirt road in the rural South, I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, what am I going to talk to him about? So anyway, he was a very gracious man, and we got through that just fine. And what an interesting fellow.
Well, he's gracious, and he's our kind of people, Peter. I mean, you know, you on your little dirt road, me on my in my little small southern town, and there he is. You know, a son of North Carolina, raised a fundamentalist, you know, had, I felt a, oh, wow, a great big ego jumping out here, Peter. I felt a real sense of kinship with him because he had to get around, over, through, above that just miserable briar patch of Southern fundamentalism to get to a place, you know, to get to that high piece of ground where he could see Jesus.
Well, you know, that's so interesting to me, Bob, and I'll tell you why. The stories that you've told us about the things that you were exposed to growing up in the church in your in West Virginia in your area,
Alabama actually, but yeah,
and his stories, you know, I'm supposed to be in the rural South because I'm like, you know, North Florida is like the same as South Georgia, but I didn't get it nearly that bad. I mean, they just never really beat anybody up from the Methodist pulpit down here. It was just sort of an unspoken, you know, they're, you know, less than sort of a thing. But you guys really went through it was like enforced doctrine for you guys.
Oh, sure. And it's hurtful business. I mean, I kid, you know, I say I'm a recovering Southern Baptist, and I, you know, that's my shtick. But by the same token, there's an awful lot of truth in it. It really, you know, I will spend a lifetime getting over it because yeah, I can still, I can still remember the first time I heard a man raise his voice, and it was the screaming preacher behind the pulpit in the Baptist church where I was raised, and he scared the bejesus out of me.
Oh, wow. The old red-faced eyes popping out, screaming damnation?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It does something to you, and that's why I thought it interesting. I gotta get hold of the man's books. I don't know if I'm gonna have to call the publisher and beg or what, but I gotta read the books because it's something I've thought about a lot, and that is that question of what does an American South without fundamentalist religion look like?
Well, that was a very good question, Bob. But honestly, there were so many questions coming up that I don't know if I actually. Did I actually ask that? I don't remember because I went through so
you
many
did.
Questions.
You did, and he said, "Well, you know, I pretty much spent an entire book on it." And
oh, that's right. That's yes. I remember, and I think it was his latest book, which was Religion for Non-Nazi. I have it in front of me. It was called Jesus for the Non-Religious, I believe, is the book he spent. I think they're making a DVD of that. I went to his, by the way, there's a link to that at strictlyconfidentialradio.com on today's date. And I, of course, I immediately went to Netflix to see if it was the DVD was there, but it's not. And apparently it's a sort of a study course that he has taken a lot of time to develop, as best I can tell. And, you know, there are people out there doing good things, but boy, the Christians are giving this man hell. You would not believe what I'm seeing on the web, the responses to him. You know, especially.
Well, let's not
know,
call the people who are giving him hell Christians.
Well, that's true, but you know he's talking about the ascension, and that and it wasn't until later that he was much later in the, what he said 70 or 80 that it was even talked about that Jesus came back physically, and and all these things, all these embellishments happened, and he's quite right about that. And after having read misquoting Jesus, it's all. But these people are furious about that. They will not have a word of it. And I know that they all went through the roof when they heard about the different paths, like the Muslims and the Buddhists and that sort of thing, to the same place. And he talked about being in heaven, and I never got to the heaven and hell question. But he talked about, sitting around with the Buddhists and the Muslims in heaven. And I thought, that's cool. But I know that people are loading their shotguns right now.
Well, they are, and... And that's why I can't understand them. I honest to God, I can't understand them, because you have to be a wholly irrational person to believe that a little cracker turns into human flesh in your belly. Okay? I mean, it's like all rational processes just got to be gone. Okay? It just does. Wine turns into blood? Mm-mm. Not home for that one. And all the other stuff that he mentioned, an Earth-centered universe where the universe literally spins like a pinwheel around Earth. You have to suspend, in the modern world, you have to suspend your ability to comprehend reality. And, frankly, I find it so offensive because they make Jesus into this zombie god. And I really, really resent it.
Yeah, absolutely. This dead thing that you're only supposed to read about in the history book, and the Bible is the history book, and it's all literally true, and the Bible said it, and that settles it. So there's no mystery. There's no... it's like you're supposed to have a personal relationship with something you read in a book. It's more than that. It's real. It's real stuff.
And he flies, and he's invisible. He's a comic book. He's a comic book character. No, he wasn't. He was, if he was real, he was a real human being who had radical ideas for his time that remained too radical, probably, that they're still too radical.
And that was a question I never actually got to with Bishop Spong that I wanted to get to was, this period between, the crucifixion and then for them to begin inventing stories of, the resurrection and that he came back as a real human being that could, and then they have to get rid of the body some way, so he has to ascend. You know what I mean? If he comes back alive, he can't die again. So clearly something very significant happened to impress those people to the depth that they wrote all those things.
Well, look what happened.
Clearly something.
Look what happens in 70 A.D. In 70 A.D., the Romans get tired of the uppityness of their little Palestinian territory, province, whatever, and go in and tear Jerusalem to the ground. What would happen if somebody came in and just destroyed Tallahassee, Peter? What would that do to your world?
Well, that would pretty much rock my world, huh?
Food would become impossible to get. There would be no electricity. Everything that your world depended on would end. And you would start casting around, looking for something to make some sense out of all of this. None of this stuff gets committed to paper until after Jerusalem has been leveled.
Interesting point. Yeah. And then that engenders all the bad feelings and the generational hatred too.
Yeah, there are interesting little things in Scripture, like where Jesus says not a stone will be left standing. Well, some stones were left standing. You know, but But you've got to put those words in his mouth, like Jesus walking around talking about being vegetation. You got to hang that stuff in his mouth to speak to the people and answer the questions that they're asking at that particular time. I got a little idea here, Peter, if you don't mind.
Sure.
You were talking about, I've got a song here, and we'll have a little musical interlude.
Cool.
Because there's a song I was thinking about when he was talking about sitting around in heaven saying, well, you know, I found it this way, you know, with the Muslims and the Jews and the Buddhists and the Hindus. This is an artist, a tremendous songwriter named Kevin Welch. He's one of those songwriters. He's out in Asheville. And I think you're going to get a real kick out of it. And we'll connect with John while I've got you muted, okay?
Cool.
All right, Everybody's Got a Walk from Kevin Welch.
Angel wings. You might be tied to a wheelchair, maybe a jet plane pilot. You might be nothing but thin air. You might be a Muslim. You might be Hindu. You might be Christian. Might be a Jew. But everybody's got to walk. Everybody got a walk. Ain't no free ride. Everybody's got a walk.
Not too shabby, huh?
Well done.
See why I immediately thought of that when I heard Bishop Spong say that.
Yes, it fits perfectly. Honestly, no. Welcome, John.
Hey, Peter, how are you? Hey, Bob.
Hey, John. So
what have I missed?
Well, it's not so much what you know. I didn't know what we'd get from you when we finally connected, if you'd still just be, you know, with mad excitement from what happened in your world over the weekend.
Well, yeah,
well,
I
want to hear it so bad, but I don't want you to tell your whole show on this segment, but I definitely want to know what's up.
I won't give away everything for the show, but there's been this sense of like bizarre euphoria, and the result was in about 24 hours when I finally kind of had this bit of a light bulb go off on that explained what I was feeling, and it was the fact that I had actually just witnessed a working democracy do its thing. And having been on the wrong end of a broken democracy for so long in regards to the United States, you know, it's in for 24 hours and I'm still going, okay, when do they take it from us? Wait a minute. No, this one's not broken. They're not going to take it from us. It's real. This has been the most bizarre experience. And you go to even the Australian blogs and the threads are all kind of somewhat composed because I think it's still settling in for many.
Well, John, just out of curiosity, do you guys have to deal with those filthy voting machines? Or, I mean, was this a straight-up paper ballot election? I mean, how did it work?
Well, it's a straight-up paper ballot election. Now, the electronic voting machines have been discussed, and there was supposedly going to be a test run of them in this election, but maybe it got fought back. I screamed bloody murder to a few Australian bloggers. I said, look, I've been doing this fight in the United States for long enough. I don't need to be the only one doing it here. But voting machines, eek, 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 the Antichrist. And a few bloggers did jump on it fairly heavily. So I don't think it even made it to its testing phase. So, yeah, this is paper ballots and pencils and preferences were huge this time. The Greens scored big in primary vote numbers, and there were a whole bunch of states that Labor got purely because of Green preferences of anywhere from like 10 to 14%, which was just massive.
Wow.
Well, John, have the fundamentalists started chiming in yet? Surely they're going to be screaming about how the end has come. No doubt this conservative government was, you know, hand and lockstep with the fundies that we just heard discussed from Bishop Spong. Have they started wailing and gnashing at the teeth?
Well, I haven't heard so much that, but they've been given some fresh meat for them to gnash at. Word is that the Labor Party is going to going to recommend four different departments investigate the exclusive Brethren for their political activities and follow the trail of their money, roddy, roddy, rah. And as I've mentioned before, this is a very bizarre kind of cult, Christian cult, that has put lots of money into the Bush elections and the Howard elections, and somewhat of a dodgy organization. They haven't even been handed officially the reins of power, and they're already announcing investigations into the weird and wacky cult that supported John Howard.
Well, again, I echo Peter. I don't want to make you do your whole show just this little time frame. For the most part, we were discussing Peter's guest, Bishop John Shelby Spong, who was just a how old is he, Peter? Do you know offhand?
I have his date of birth on one of these pieces of paper, and I don't have that.
Well, he certainly for a guy who'd been 24 years at doing what he was doing. And longer even before that, I imagine he certainly sounded vibrant and exciting, and you know, his passion. When you mentioned Australia, I mean, you could just hear him light up, even through the miraculous distance of the internet tubes or whatever. It's clear that Australia means a lot to him. It's clear that the world means a lot to him, Peter. And toward that end, you know, I admired the grace with which he said, you know, I don't write these books to try to change fundamentalist minds. I'm trying to offer some encouragement to people who oppose them. But yet at the same
time, wasn't that great?
It was. But at the same time, you know, he didn't come out and you know, mention the fact that Jerry Falwell's roasting over on a spit over an open flame in hell, which he is.
Yeah, he's diplomatic, but he's very, very much to the point. Not diplomatic to the point of blunting anything, but I think the man, I think he's in his early 60s, if I'm not mistaken. He's a little older than I, but not much. And he's had an interesting life, to say the least. But yeah, the whole thing about, apparently he knew Falwell when he was and spent time with him, and
poor guy.
You know, I was horrified when I read that, but nonetheless he treated Falwell, you know, on an even keel. He didn't just all melt down and start talking about, you know, like we're prone to do. We're just prone to, hell, he's going to hell. You know, we're just all adamant. But, you know.
Well, that's only because we can spot him and, you know, we've been given special powers to tell the ones that are going to roast. Yeah.
Right, we get to do that. But the guys with the Masters of Divinity, they don't do that. They're far more diplomatic. Yeah, I admire that, man. That was Lottie in the chat room, by the way, who recommended him. And actually, we first approached him months ago, but he was just about to leave. His wife contacted me back, and they were just about to leave on the world trip. I believe I mentioned that they were in Wales and London and Scotland and South Africa, et cetera, et cetera. And they're coming up in Toledo on the beginning of December, and don't have that date in front of me exactly, but maybe this is it. Yes, he's coming up in... First Unitarian Church of Toledo on December the 1st and 2nd, which is just around the corner. And he'll be doing a series of lectures there. And then on December 9, he's at Unity of New York. And I would love for him to pass through Florida. I mean, this guy's of great interest to me.
That's one thing that makes it a little bit tough. And, John, I think, you know, based on some of the things you and I have talked about, we share a certain commonality of, you know, not buying into any organized doctrine or dogma or anything like that. And when you hear one of these guys, you tend to go, you know, I could sit, you know, I could see getting up on a Sunday morning and going and hanging out and hearing what this guy has to say for a couple of hours. And the pity of it all is that I don't have the chance of a snowball in hell of hearing anybody like that anywhere around me. And it's kind of frustrating. I don't know about you, John, but you know, you'd like to hear that affirmation. You'd like to hear that uplift once in a while, and it just ain't there. It's just not there.
Apparently, he was born in 1931, chat tells me, and one of our chatters has actually met him when he was in Boston. Interesting man. I was just looking for my little article that says that what they need to save Christianity from him. What was the one of the web articles I had? Boy, they hate him.
Oh, they hate him a bunch.
They hate him big time.
But they,
he
but,
is.
And you know, yeah, because I'm a pro. It is in the nature of conservatives, which is what these people are. We call them fundamentalists. When you want to get right down to it, they are conservatives. The people who nailed Christ on a cross were conservatives. The people who handed a cup of hemlock to Socrates to drink were conservatives. A Hindu conservative gunned down Gandhi. A conservative white male gunned down Dr. King. A conservative white male gunned down John Kennedy. Okay? What these people are conservatives, and they are, and it goes, it's hand in glove with what he was saying. When you get to start debating these people and they can't just burn you at the stake or kill you out of hand, you've already won. And it's just a matter of letting time do time's work. But it's conservatism, religious conservatism that he's doing battle against, and these people understand perhaps better than we do what he presents and what he represents, and that is the ultimate demise of their power structure and their power system.
Well, he was on Bill O'Reilly.
Oh, God. I can only imagine.
I wish I had the audio. Apparently, he's been on Bill O'Reilly twice. But I only have the transcript of one of them. Now, apparently the reason he was on is because Bishop Spong reacted verbally and out loud to the media to the fact that Bill O'Reilly was saying that basically that the African Americans, all he hears a quote, all Americans realize that African Americans are much better off in the United States than they would be with their brethren back in Africa. And Spong came out and said that was a racist statement. And, of course, Bill O'Reilly is trying to defend himself, and he does that in this manner that he normally does by cutting people off so they can't complete sentences and say, oh, wait, hold it. That's not what I said. You know, the whole drill, the Bill O'Reilly drill. But Spong's point was that he pretty much grew up with that sort of thing. You know, he knows the drill. And, you know, the whole bit about being, you know, taken from your homeland, how can anybody be better off? You know, so anyway, yeah, he stood up to Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly did not like that. That's an amazing thing. I wouldn't go on Bill O'Reilly, would you?
Couldn't pay me.
Not with a 10-foot pole. He's brave.
John might go on Bill O'Reilly if he could, you know, wire him up to a few volts.
I'd do it in a heartbeat. I've actually tried to think of ways of being able to get through Rush's screeners.
Well, yeah, and the sad thing is you never can because the guy's on a 3-minute delay.
Yeah.
So whatever you have to say, you have to say it in such a way that it gets that it takes you 3 minutes to say it, and then whoops, oh, I'm sorry, it looks like we lost the caller.
But you know, Bill O'Reilly's the only guy that I know in all this great media that, you know, will get upset about something, invite you on his program and say, "Now I'm going to counteract your accusations with shoving my head firmly up my own ass." I swear. I think I've seen actually video of one of Bishop Spong's altercations with O'Reilly, and it's just another example of O'Reilly just being complete and utter lunatic. You know, and he does the whole, you know, cut him off routine, and you're like going, and this served you how exactly?
Yeah. Yeah, well, apparently, you know, Bill O'Reilly feels that he can firmly state with his lily white butt and his lily white mouth who's better off and where. You know, there was I did some reading about the slave ships over the Thanksgiving holiday when they're shipping out. That's a strange thing to look at over Thanksgiving holiday. I completely agree, but you know, there were details that I was not aware of. For instance. Of course, these people were chained down, and they were basically naked, chained down, and the urine, the feces, everything just, you know, just like fell on the floor of the ship. So this was all like sloshing back and forth inches below them, in fact, making contact with their bodies as it splashed up. And the article pointed out that these people were chained to prevent them from throwing themselves overboard. That the conditions were so horrifying that was a real risk, and that if they were left unchained, they would break out of the door and throw themselves overboard rather than. And it just really touched me. I was horrified. So yeah, they're a lot better off over here. Sure, yeah, I believe that.
But you know that's like a lobster's finest hour. The boiling pot of water may be a lobster's finest hour, but he ain't there by choice.
Well, there you go. And oh God, this detail just flashed in my mind. I know you're not ready for this. They would, of course, become very ill, and they would have dysentery, and which of course causes constant diarrhea. And so when they would get them to the port and put them up on the slave, they would take. I'm serious, Bob and John. They took a rope and they knotted like 5 or 6 knots into the rope and shoved it up their anus to block the flow of diarrhea so that they would not be, so that people wouldn't think they were sick by defecating on themselves.
They just got a little touch of seasickness. They're getting their land legs back under them. They'll be fine by the time you get to the plantation.
Yeah, knotted rope. It's what we do to each other.
You know, I'm not sure which I find more horrifying, putting it in or pulling it out. I mean,
no.
Yeah, either way.
either way.
Yeah.
So.
Well, just moving on to a couple of other high points. Speaking of Bill O'Reilly, which of course takes us to Fox News. Fox News has decided that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, get this, guys, you're going to love it. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has declared war on English.
Okay.
It doesn't even shock anymore, does it?
No,
well, of course they did. Here it comes, okay. The war on Columbus Day. No, John Gibson, Tom Tank. They had an interview with Tom Tancredo, who is, of course, insane. And the name of the program is The Big Story.
And I'm impressed.
Yeah, aren't you? Hey, you know, we came up with the horn section on a moment's notice, and you know they got millionaires coming up with The Big Story.
Yeah.
Man.
We could change our programming in a heartbeat, though. We could change it right now. We could just start a whole different show right now, damn it, if we wanted to. And there'd be
whatever we call it, The Big Story's already taken.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of like the roach clip. You have to call it that because potholder's taken.
That's good.
And just say, all my future plans have been foiled.
Yeah, I know. So John Gibson alleges that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is, and this is a quote, trying to force the Salvation Army to hire people who don't speak English.
Imagine that.
Pelosi reportedly pledged not to enact a provision that would prevent the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission from pursuing a national origin discrimination lawsuit against the Salvation Army because they fired two Spanish-speaking workers after the organization began enforcing an English language policy.
Oh, jeez.
So they're doing the segment, and this is the fun part, you know, with the Chiron and the chroma key and all that crap. During the segment, with Tom Tancredo, who, like I noted, is insane, they ran a full-screen graphic showing a picture of Nancy Pelosi with the phrase, "The War on English" and "Just Say No to America's Language," and why.
Oh, my God.
When they took that down and put up Tom Tancredo, you know, Tancredo, it's an old Navajo word. God knows his people never migrated to the United States or anything. In the lower right corner of the screen, they show an image of Pelosi's face, and then it flashes back and forth with, "Speak Spanish."
Lord have mercy.
I wish I was kidding. I do. I wish...
I keep trying to say something, but I can't, just because that's just... so over the top.
I know. Speak Spanish, Nancy Pelosi. Speak Spanish, Nancy Pelosi. You know, it's kind of like that Warner Brothers cartoon where the neon light flashes, evil scientist, boo, evil scientist, boo.
Boo.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but there's no end of insanity. Let's see. We've signed a paper, Peter.
We have signed?
Yes, the Bush administration has signed an agreement. We've released principles for permanent military presence in Iraq.
Oh, really? We've done that. We've actually come out and done that.
Yeah.
I don't know where they're going to stay. You know, all that construction, nobody really wanted to build it anyway, and it's all completely screwed up. It's all going to fall over.
And, of course, in true totalitarian fashion, the White House has announced that we've only done it because the Iraqis asked us to.
Bull.
Oh yeah.
You grew up in the Cold War, didn't you, Peter? I mean, you remember how the Soviets would come out and say, "We are only in Czechoslovakia because Noble People's Republic of Czechoslovakia has desperately begged Noble Soviet Union to be in Czechoslovakia for personal protection of Noble Czechoslovakian people." And you know, then you cut away to the photograph of the footage of the people rioting in the streets, you know, "Go home, you know, USSR, go home now."
Yeah, it's the same now. They want us out of there so bad they can taste it, and it'll all melt down, but it's already all melting down, so what difference does it make? I mean, you know, it's a terrible tragedy. I'm not trying to make light of it, but I'm just saying that the whole thing has gone caca anyway. I see no hope.
Which is exactly what they wanted in so many ways. They just want chaos because then it makes it easy to stay.
Well, yeah, and because then, you know, if we do get somebody in the White House, preferably a Democrat, who says, you know, it's time for us to leave. Oh, but, you know, the Republicans all, you can't, you'll be making a liar out of us. We done signed an agreement saying we'll be there forever and a day as long as the sky is blue and grass is green and water flows. We done signed a treaty. Well, Buster, we've broken a few of those in the past. Geneva Convention comes to it. So, you know, this will be, we'll bust this one, too. How about that?
Well, it's, you know, go ahead, Peter.
Well, no, go ahead. You were on topic. I was on a different topic. I could just tell me what you're doing.
Well, I'm going to be interested to see how suddenly, you know, whether the Australians are important to the Americans after all once Rudd gets going. Because, I mean, one of his top five things to do getting into office is to begin negotiations with the United States for Australian troops pulling out of Iraq, which he'd like to have them home like tomorrow if he could, but we can't do that, so we'll talk nice, but we're getting the hell out. And, you know, Bush doesn't have too many friends left, and I was really surprised to see that, Howard's loss affected Cheney so deeply, but it'll be
clear.
Very interesting. Yeah. Our only friend left.
Put that little rubber stick between his teeth. We're going to charge him up.
But you know, old Bushy doesn't really have any friends left out there once the Australians are gone.
No, like
and
I said, he's down to the Moroccan monkeys. And they're having second thoughts.
Go ahead, Peter.
No, I was going to ask, did it come up in your news? I wasn't able to listen to your entire show, Bob. Did it come up about this Tancredo leaving before the end of the year, that the reason he was doing that is because of the law changes in 2008 and you have to wait 2 years before you can accept it?
You mean Trent Lott?
Yeah, Trent Lott. Did that come up? I thought that was a very... there's probably going to be a whole gaggle of them leaving for the end of the year, because you know that's what they want to do.
Well, it would suit me fine. Of course, you know, there's not a lot of risk of Trent Lott's seat being taken by, you know, a Democrat or anything. They pretty much killed Democrats in the cradle in Mississippi. Or, you know, run Republicans and call them Democrats like Gene Taylor. So, you know, that's not a real threat to the balance of power, but that's part of it. But, you know, I'm sorry. I am who I am, and I think my evil thoughts, Peter, and I'm convinced that Larry Flint got to him.
I was thinking that too, Bob. I thought because Flint was vowing to release another huge name, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Yes, and he hasn't done that yet, has he?
No, he hasn't.
Wouldn't surprise me.
You know, it's kind of a rehash of the first 30 minutes of the show, but I'm convinced that Trent Lott will be popping up as a lobbyist for the provinces of northern Afghanistan now that the news story is out about the little boy, what do they call him? The Bacha Barish, the boys without beards, little dancing boys who get dressed up as girls and dance for male patrons at all-night parties in northern Afghanistan.
Oh, Jesus, because they can't get real little girls, or it's against their religion or something, so they make...
No, they just like the boys.
Oh, they just like the boys.
They just like the little boys.
Excuse me. Oops.
Yeah, the quote from the guy at the end of the article, it's loading now. He said, "We know it is immoral and un-Islamic, but how can we quit? We do not like women. We just want the boys."
Good Lord.
Yeah, little boys as young as 12, 13 years old are bought from their poverty-stricken parents, dressed as women, have fake breasts glued on them, women's clothing put on them, and they dance for their lords.
So, like, it's like one of those, like, belly dance kind of a thing?
I guess. You know, I don't know. Maybe they've got a special belly dancing burqa or something.
What a bunch of pervs. I mean, that's totally perv.
There's a name for the practice. It's called Bacha Bazi. which translates from Uzbek or Pashtun or whatever as boy play.
Perv. Sorry.
I very much enjoy hugging a boy. His smell and fragrance kills me.
That's disgusting, Bob. That's so disgusting. I can't begin
to tell you. It's disturbing stuff.
Oh, yeah, it is.
I was having trouble listening to you.
That was disturbing. Yeah, isn't it? And I'm convinced. I'm absolutely convinced that Trent Lott will show up on a junket to Afghanistan just any day now. Or maybe a USO trip from Rush Limbaugh takes a USO trip to visit the troops. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Nudge as good as wink to a blind man. To visit the troops in northern Afghanistan.
I had no idea that was going on over there.
Oh, I thought I emailed this to you, Peter. My bad.
Well, you did earlier, but I kind of let it go out of because I knew the guest.
Because yeah, I mean, it's hard to bring up boy play and beardless boys with Bishop Spong. I understand completely.
Had to segue it in at all, and so it was of interest, but I didn't log it in my mind.
Oh, but you know, you just watch. You just watch. I mean, I'm convinced Trent Lott didn't. Yeah, he wants to get on the gravy train, but it's not like he's going to be, you know, down to pork and beans and drinking powdered milk because he can't become a lobbyist for 2 years. There's something else. You know,
well, that's a good point. He could have waited 2 years.
Yeah, that's Larry Flint walking. Senator Lott, I'd like for you to look at what's in this little manila envelope. Yeah, that's you, and that's you in the cowboy costume without the pants on, isn't it, Senator Lott?
Lord, my mind just glazes over the horror. These wrinkled old Republican men doing whatever the hell of this they do.
The wrinkled old Republican, yeah, I know.
It horrifies me. Just makes me go all icky inside.
Well, you know, why can't they just have a normal relationship with a guy, with a girl, whatever? You know, normal hand-holding, honey, let's go to the movies, you know, have a nice romantic dinner, come home, you know, whatever. No. There has to be hardware and costumes involved. What did I say the other night about the closets so many people live in? You know, here are these Republicans who would, you know, like to, you know, who like to get their fill-in-the-blank freak on, but they can't because the preacher doesn't like it.
Well, do you think...
Meanwhile, the preacher has a diving suit on. Yeah, John, go ahead, what?
No, I'm just saying, do you think it's just a complete inverse reaction to the, you know, I'm going to put out this persona of being Mr. Righteous and Mr. Clean or Mrs. Clean or whatever, and... Because of that persona, is it just automatically that the inverse actions are just gonna go even more extreme and get into all this hardware and other nonsense?
Well, on the one hand, they can't, these conservative, uptight types can't be seen to live their own lives that way because they don't think Emery and Eileen, who drive the blue Buick to church on Sunday, will approve. On the other hand, because they live in a high-powered world, it's like you remember when Michael Jordan got in gambling trouble? Here's the greatest basketball player ever to play, and the guys on a golf course playing for $100,000 Nassaus, because there's nothing left to get him off anymore.
Right.
That's a good point.
And these
things escalate.
Yeah, and these people have, you know, there comes a time when when the weed doesn't get you high and the acid doesn't trip you out, and you got to find something else.
Glue and Thorazine works for me.
Well, see, that's because you're moderate.
Do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have a box. You don't have a box fan blowing across a 55-gallon drum of glue at you 24/7.
That's true.
After a while, it doesn't work anymore. I mean, what's the fun of going home to the old lady, so to speak, when you know your work day involves screwing with the lives of a billion people?
Well, that's a good point. There's that whole high, that power high, evil or... Yeah, the whole evil power high, the whole Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta have something that matches. You know, I don't know. You know, the cowboy suit or you know, the biker bar or whatever. You got to push the envelope with these people. They can't have
good point.
They can't have a normal relationship because they're not normal in their own rights. And I realize that normal's just a setting on a dryer, Peter. But you see where I'm going.
Mm-hmm. Well, one could argue that the person. Well, let me start at the beginning. It almost seems like they're into such a control trip that paying people to do bizarre things is a way to allow them to continue to control. Now, there'd be an argument between the person being paid, or they would say maybe they're in control, and, you know, who's in control. But at least there's the illusion of having control when you're paying for it. At least that's my guess.
Well, there's that, and or there's the giving up of control. Look at David Vitter from Louisiana, who was paying a sex worker to put him in diapers and like, you know, hit him.
Oh yeah, and that's another psycho thing. Yeah, did she have to have a break from all that control? Yeah. Wow, how twisted is that? I thought I was weird last started listening to all this stuff.
Oh, you know what? under the worst of circumstances, I don't think I could be as weird as the garden variety Republican. You know, it's like the joke about the guy who's stranded on a desert island with Cindy Crawford. Stop me if you know this one. Eventually, things happen. They're stranded together on the desert island, and you know, this relationship blooms, and you know, it's been about a year or so, and they haven't seen another human soul. And one day, he picks up a little charred stick and he hands it to her, and he says, "Can I call you Larry?"
Sorry.
And Cindy Crawford says, well, I guess. And he says, hands her the piece of charcoal, and he says, "Would you put a mustache on?" And she kind of draws a mustache on him. "Yeah." And he says, here, do some sideburns, too. And he says, "And you're sure it's okay if I call you Larry?" And she says, "Well, yeah." And he turns to her and goes, "Hey, Larry, I'm doing Cindy Crawford."
Oh, Lord. But speaking of cowboys.
Yes.
I've just been all hot for this ever since he mentioned it. Our guest the other evening, or my guest, D.C. LaRue, apparently is like a neighbor of the cowboy from the Village People. Is that not cool?
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. You know I want to have the cowboy as a guest. What fun. Can you imagine?
Now, it wasn't the cowboy who came out and said, "I'm not gay," was it?
No. That was the cop, I think.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that was a black cop.
Okay.
Because there's only one, I think so. But anyway, I'm just thinking that there's got to be lots of dirt in that show. And inquiring minds want to know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The cowboy. Are they just a block down from the Indian too?
I don't know where the Indian is, but the cowboy is. We have a fix of the cowboy.
just as long as there aren't any little Afghan dancing boys. Yeah.
Nah.
Oh, by the way, just in the last couple of minutes we've got before the show ends, have either of you heard about the Italian porno professor? She's actually an Italian school teacher. They've called her the Italian. Apparently, Italian TV has its equivalent of, you know, da 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 da, Entertainment Tonight or whatever. Perfectly respectable woman, teacher in the school system. Her name is Anna Siriani. And she's been fired from her teaching job at the Friuli Venezia Giulia Education Authority because it turns out that she also, on the side, does porn. She said, "I'm a normal woman with my family and my work as a teacher. I'm also looking for transgression and sex." And they canned her for it. It's not like, you know, it's not like she was stripping like the woman in the Hot for Teacher video with Van Halen or anything. But, you know, again, can't do that. Apparently, you know, in what is it? The more corporate we get, they own your off time too. You know, it's part of the reason I don't think I can ever go back into the real working world. Because the minute some guy who I know is at least not as intelligent as me looks at me and goes, you know, I don't like the way you do that. Okay, well, screw you. I'm leaving.
Yeah, that off-the-clock thing, too, in the corporate world can include so many things like golf, bore me to tears, and, you know, the drinks at the country club and all the things that go with it.
We're going bowling next Sunday. You're going to come, ain't you?
No,
I'm really not. You know,
No,
the bowling shoes alone are enough. You know, no. Although I guess they're kind of hip in some quarters. I feel like I'm just. Is there anything either one of you guys want to bring up here in the last couple of minutes before we roll into John's show?
Well, I would just.
Go ahead, John.
I'm just going to sneak in with this real quick, Bob, just because, you know, I've been kind of half on, half off all day today. But the whole thing with Cheney and that this could end up being a cover for him to back away quietly, I'm 100% with you on that. And I will put down the virtual paycheck that neither of us get on the fact that this is going to be the beginning of the let Cheney go off into the sunset without too much hubbub maneuver that they've been looking for.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that, but that was the reason for the harp. Oh, that's a good point, John. Wouldn't surprise me in the least.
And next thing you know, Vice President Jeb.
Brad's with you all the way on that one.
Well, I haven't been able to give up on the idea ever since I saw that quick, you know, shot and then get him off the screen. You know, you could almost hear the IFB conversation, that little knot of people that had Jeb 08 signs at the 2004 convention. They walk among us. God, you know, John, if you ever teach me to use the effects on this board, you know, wouldn't they walk among us, us.
I know, I so wish that I had bought a board with a reverb on it, but I bought the straight board thinking I would never do that.
You've never bought a straight anything in your life, Peter. What are you talking about?
Oh, I am so busted on that one. I guess I'm going to have to get a courtesan reverb to plug it. To plug in somewhere. I was thinking how fun that would be.
Oh, it would be. Sorry, I couldn't resist that one. You can't put things like that up over the rim without me, you know, jumping.
Well, yeah. But listen, can Jeb do that? I mean, isn't there
No, there's not a.
There's not a? So Bush could pick anybody?
Yeah.
But has to go through the Senate for approval, right?
Does it? You know, these guys don't go through the Senate for anything else.
Aside from, you know, the law-breaking, you know, ways of these folks, but in normal circumstances.
Confirmation? We don't need no stinking confirmation.
You'll take who we give you and like it.
That's a shame.
But then, you know, but I mean, even if it had to go through confirmation, you know, Robert Byrd would stand up and say, the president is entitled to his choice of nominee, and I'm going to honor my agreement, and we will not filibuster this nomination. And Mary Landrieu and Ben Nelson and Bill Nelson and Lieberman and the rest of that sick little crowd would go, us neither.
Who were the evil twins that were in charge of, was it North Korea? There was some little country that had evil twins, and one of them finally kicked off.
Ooh, I missed that one. How do I miss something that fun? Hey, wait. It's time to go.
Oh, okay.
All right, okay. So All Foxed Up is on the way. Peter, thank you. John, thank you. This has been another fun hour.
Thank you.
And we'll see you on the other side.
You've been holding on.
This is the Quality News Network. The number two ranking Republican senator plans to step down. Senator Trent Lott of Mississippi will resign by the end of the year, but is not exactly saying why. With 5 years to go in his current term, his powerful position on Capitol Hill could go to one of several colleagues, including John Kyle of Arizona or Lamar Alexander of Tennessee. President Bush greeted former Vice President Al Gore to the Oval Office for a private meeting and the traditional photo with the American 2007 Nobel Award winner. Also at tonight's state dinner, Mr. and Mrs. Bush will host diplomatic representatives from more than 40 countries who will attend tomorrow's Middle Eastern Peace Conference in Annapolis, Maryland. Mr. Bush also signed a deal setting the foundation for a potential long-term U.S. troop presence in Iraq.